Welcome to the Eat the Evidence podcast, a show for cake and cookie decorators and sugar artists of all kinds. I'm your host, Kimberly Chapman, and this is episode number 41 on April 11th, 2019. On this episode, the one and only Julia Usher is here to talk about her upcoming competitions and television shows, plus a lot of background insights into what it takes to run her amazing online and real-world cookie decorating endeavors. So whether you're starting the flood coat on your latest batch, putting the final details on a competition entry, or washing up dozens of piping bags and couplers after your latest masterpiece, let's get this show started to inspire and educate you on your sugar arts journey. Joining me now is one of the world's top cookie artists, an international teacher and YouTube star and author and host of the top cookie competitions in the world. And of course, I can only be talking about the one and only Julia Usher.
Hello, Kim. How are you?
I am so happy you're on. I'm like squeeing like a fangirl. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. I just got back from CookieCon, so I'm in the mode of trying to get back into the groove of cookie decorating here. I've still got a bunch of unpacking to do 3 days later.
I'm such a fangirl. I even read your posts about packing.
Oh, do you? Well, I don't share too much because honestly, it's a disaster here. Oftentimes I'll stay unpacked until the next trip and just sort of, you know, repack.
Yeah. But I mean, like, that's one of the things that's amazing about you is the way you even post how you pack all those little cookies and all those little tools.
It's been a pretty significant question that I've been getting lately, and that this relates to this cookie competition I'm running later in the year. A lot of people are coming in from different places to compete with 3D cookies, and so a lot of the questions I was online yesterday doing a live Q&A surrounded how to pack, and I do actually have a blog post, no joke, about how I pack these things, and we covered that in quite some detail yesterday. Because that's a huge concern, is just getting the pieces to these competitions.
Yeah, I mean, I've had, every time I've flown from here back to Austin, people are like, oh, what you made was great, now tell us how you got it here.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. That's a moving target, too, with TSA and changing airline regulations. I've noticed in the last year they've gotten a little more stringent about checking things that go through the conveyor belts through the x-ray machines. I've been getting picked up much more frequently
really?
With my cookies and having to have them, you know, open up boxes and things. So
my cookie that I wanted Austin a couple of years ago, the sewing machine cookie, that got swabbed, but only on the way out, thankfully.
Oh, good.
So it'd already been judged, so I'm like, yeah, fine, swab it. I'm just taking it home for posterity now.
Yeah, it's always more relaxed on the way home, that's for sure.
Yeah, at that point.
I'm often traveling with less, and I care less about what happens to it. Sometimes, though, I do recycle some of the pieces from class to class. If I know I'm using them in a class later in the year, I'll try to hold on to them so I don't have to remake demo pieces. But generally, it's a lot less stress on the way home than going to an event.
Right. And you've been teaching all over the world.
Yeah, I have. This year, I've been doing a lot more in the United States for whatever reason than elsewhere. But I just recently got back from Kuwait, which was an interesting trip. And I've in Japan, and then I've got Australia coming up, not for a bit, but I've got a couple of U.S. engagements before. Then I typically do like one big thing a month. That's about all I can swing while trying to keep the YouTube channel going and Cookie Connection going. I just have a lot of irons in the fire right now, which is probably the biggest challenge for me is juggling everything and also getting sleep.
I sometimes wonder if you and Terry Pringle Wood must be cloned for just the sheer amount of output you both do.
Oh, yeah, her output's of a different sort. I mean, she's constantly putting, I think she puts out a cookie a day, and I wish I was that productive, but what I'm struggling with is getting creative time in the kitchen to produce, you know, because so a lot of my time is admin time, a lot of it. Right now, today I'm sitting here scheduling flights for SoFlow, because I'll be selling stencils there.
Right.
And lining up my assistant, getting all the signage printed, ordering some new tablecloths, you know, I don't have an assistant to do any of that. So that's been a good, since I've been back from CookieCon, that's actually been a 2 days solid work, just getting all the stuff lined up for that show, which is in a month. And then hopefully with that stuff underway, I can get to work on my next video shoot, which isn't for a while, but I need typically about 8 to 12 weeks of production time to be ready to shoot 8 videos. I shoot about 8 at a time.
Yeah, didn't you say once, I think in one of your posts, that you have your shooting kitchen and then like another kitchen?
Yeah, so the upstairs kitchen is my, which is where we shoot, is actually our personal kitchen. And I do a lot of my prep work in the basement, which is a disaster and no one can see it. I really need about a year to get that organized. But it has an oven and a fridge and tables and lots of stuff all over the place down there. So I keep that clutter out of our personal view. Typically, I try to. But the kitchen will get transformed for a period of about a week in advance of a shoot, week or 2 weeks sometimes, and after, because I bring in a faux countertop to kind of elevate the counter to make it easier for them to get cameras in at the right angles. And then I have all my stuff that I'm shooting staged on the kitchen table. So it can be pretty disruptive for a period of time. And then after we shoot the videos, I personally shoot all the still photographs that are used in the videos. I think it's always hard to capture a good end shot of my projects on video that's nicely staged and styled, because there's the backdrop of my kitchen behind me and my tools and things like that in the video. So I will separately photograph everything. And that also is done in the kitchen area in the same space because I've got the best lighting there. So the kitchen will be disrupted, yeah, probably for a good 2 weeks surrounding a video shoot. So thankfully, I've got a pretty patient husband. I have been toying with the fact of, you know, moving, with the possibility of moving out of the house again and having studio space. You know, I had a bakery for several years. But as nice as that sounds, it has its own downsides, you know, like maintaining a completely different property.
Right.
Worrying about a completely different space and finding it, et cetera. So I'm not sure I want to do that.
I've just always found it comforting that you have a mess somewhere, because I watch your videos and everything is so calm. I mean, I don't know if you probably haven't listened to this podcast, but people have talked about how calming your voice is, and you just make people feel like they can do things, and everything's just so relaxed, and your kitchen looks like this wonderful homey blaze. And but I always feel comforted to know that somewhere you actually have a disaster pile like the rest of us.
Oh yeah, that's a complete facade. I mean, pretty much. I mean, it is a disaster zone, so I have some people who help me from time to time with events, and when they come to the house, they're forbidden to go in the basement. It's really that bad. So I'm tripping over stuff and unpack suitcases, and to the point that sometimes I can't find things I know I have, so I end up buying them again. So it's pretty bad. But I do feel like, gosh, it's probably a month or two endeavor to really organize it, and I just don't have the time. And so again, I'm toying with getting people in to help me organize, but at some level, I've got to make the decisions about what stays or goes, you know. So I don't know. It's just a matter of just too many things going on at once and not having enough time to kind of keep it together. But hopefully that'll change.
Well, you keep telling yourself you're going to prioritize. At least this is what I do. I keep telling myself I'm going to finally next week prioritize sorting. And I actually got to a point where I bought some drawers and I was sorting all my cutters and molds. And I got about halfway through taking pictures of them all, because I was going to put them in Evernote so I could stop having to buy the same things and like tag them. I know some various people use various software to categorize their cutters and stuff. And so I was going to do all that. And I got halfway through, but then my kid got sick again, and then another project came up, and then another deadline, and it was like,
I don't think I'll ever get that organized. I mean, just to have like things in one box would be like my goal. You know, I don't know that I'll ever have anything cataloged on an app. But I know they're real life challenges, and all of this stuff is really time consuming. So, but fun too.
Yeah. Okay, so we should talk about what you've got coming up, the new competition and all the great TV stuff around it. And it's amazing.
Yeah, it's pretty exciting. So The competition itself, my cookie competition, is not new. I ran it at the Oklahoma State Sugar Art Show for about 5 years prior to now, so mm-hmm. it's been in existence for a while. And in fact, Carrie Vinson was the one that teed me up to have to get it televised. So she retired from her show, as you may know, in mm-hmm. October of last year. So I needed to find a home for it because I didn't want to run it on my own. I never wanted to run it in the context of an existing show so that we could have the draw from not just cookieers, but from cake decorators and any other sugar artist who might want to enter the cookie competition. So it was kind of a no-brainer for me to relocate it to St. Louis because that's where I am. So I've been working with Peggy and Liz at Show Me Sweets show mm-hmm. in incorporating my cookie competition into that framework. So it will be running, you know, under my name at their show in perpetuity. But what happened was in July of last year, I think it was, Carrie Vincent called me and she said that a particular production company and network, who I can't name right now, were coming to Oklahoma State Sugar Art Show to film the cake competition there. Mm-hmm. But they'd also asked what other things they should be aware of, you know, that were film worthy. And she mentioned my cookie competition. So I sent in a demo reel to the production company. And while they were at Oklahoma last October, they filmed, you know, as developmental work, they filmed the cookie competition there. They interviewed me. They interviewed some of the entrants, and that was put into a pitch to the network. And the network greenlighted the program in January. So what it's going to be is a one-time special that follows the competition at the Show Me Sweets show in documentary format. So it's not a reality-based thing at all. So
right.
I should say the production company will be casting from among our entrants. At some point, Peggy and Liz, the show organizers, will send them a list of registrants, and we're gathering some information, personal and biographical information from people when they register, and they'll filter through that and choose, I don't know how many people that they want to follow from design process through to actual competition,
mm-hmm.
kind of create stories around them. I'll be narrating this, hopefully, and my judges will also be featured. So it's a really great opportunity, I think, for the cookie world in general to get exposure, because this really hasn't happened on a mainstream network here in the U.S. yet. There have been gingerbread challenges and things like that, but not this kind of emphasis on decorated cookies. So I'm pretty excited about that, and I'm hopeful that this one-time thing might lead to something more regular, too. So, but I was pleased that the right production company found me and that they were as interested in doing something that was real-time based and not reality-based, you know, not with extreme time pressure on it.
Right.
Because I really want the artists to be shown at their best. And that hopefully will, I don't know, I just want people to be shown at their best. I mean, I think some of those unnatural time constraints on some of those reality-based competitions, people can't do their best work in the context of those.
No.
So I want people to shine. And I think this allows people to do so. So it's pretty great. We've got some great prize money on it. The 2D, it's just focused on the 3D category of the competition, though. Not by my choice. I would have loved them to cover all cookies equally, but I think they felt that 3D was just more showy and then therefore more TV ready. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So they just opted to cover that category. So that'll be really, really interesting. So we're accepting registrants now, encouraging people to register early so that they don't miss the casting process if they're interested in that. If people don't want to be on TV, they can also enter and still be eligible to win. There's an area on the form where they can say, I just don't want to be on TV. You know, if people are shy about that kind of stuff. So that's a possibility, too.
That's cool.
And so it's really pretty exciting
I know a lot of people who, like, were super excited and have been telling me they're going to register, whether or not they have, I don't know. And obviously, you know, that would be private if they did anyway. But it's definitely something I'm hearing about from my cookie friends that they want to enter.
Good. Well, keep the word going. We did get a big burst of early entrants, but it's slowed down a little bit, maybe because people have been preoccupied with CookieCon. But I'd like to see the numbers grow even further. So we're still pushing it hard. And, one thing I'm hearing a lot online is a bit of fear about it,
mm-hmm.
you know, fear of failure in front of the camera, mostly that. And again, I have been trying to clarify to people that, A, it's not really about who wins or loses. It's really about learning and growing through the process. And also this notion that it's not reality based, really, I would hope would mitigate most fear, because people are going to have a long time to plan, particularly if they get started now. You know, they've got months to work on this piece. So
yeah, I guess just once you've seen a lot of, you know, particularly some of the older Food Network shows that were predicated on hurting people to some degree.
Right, right.
Like, I can see why, even like, because, you know, here with Bake Off, you know, failure makes good TV, and
right.
it can get really tough. It's actually what put me off a lot of the sugar arts competitions, was because I was watching my friends be tortured.
Right.
And some of them, like, literally, some of them put into painful situations, physically painful situations. And then you talk to them later and they're like, yeah, the producers maybe did that. And so I can see why people would start to have a fear of that. But so, yeah, but that's the word we need to spread, is that this is nice.
it's not reality based. There's no time pressure on it other than the time pressure to get your piece to the competition by July. I'm much the same way with those reality competitions, because I help a lot of casting agencies get the word out about those shows. Just they all contact me.
Mm-hmm.
They'll ask me, you know, if I want to participate. And I don't want to be a participant in that, under that time pressure. Because I know I won't perform the way I'd like to perform. So
yeah.
I usually say, hey, I'm available to judge, but I'm just not interested in this. But they don't make those decisions. Typically the judging decisions are people internal to the network, you know, people that already have shows, or I don't know, you know, I don't know what the decision process is there. But yeah, so I've avoided them myself simply because I just think they're unreasonable in terms of time expectations. Some people thrive under that, but you know, I just don't. So
yeah, I mean, I wouldn't mind, like, if I was at a cake show, you know, like Way Austin does on-site competitions and stuff.
Right.
I totally wouldn't mind colossally failing in front of that audience, because the audience is there and they're with you, and there's like almost like a pleasant sympathy, and it's all very funny and lighthearted. So I actually totally don't mind making a fool of myself in front of a friendly audience.
Uh-huh.
I don't want to do it on TV and then see social media rip me apart, you know?
See it replayed ad infinitum. Yeah.
Or talk
no,
about
I'm not here yet.
Yeah. And that's the thing. Like, if you're doing it live, people are nice when you're live. You get, you know, you see what people post about the Bake Off people. They're, you know, vicious comments that don't need to be. Like, you've seen the kind of stuff I post on Facebook. I get enough vitriol. I don't need to have vitriol for my baking.
I feel like, you know, that's a whole other area
I'm
kind of on the verge of reevaluating, is the whole social media thing. Because I think it, unfortunately, is giving people license to be just idiots in many cases, and to say whatever they... I just feel, because they don't have that other person looking them square in the eye, there's a kind of artificial distance that people just say whatever is on their mind, completely unfiltered, as if there's not a person on the receiving end. I can't tell you how many times a day I get stuff that I'm just really astounded that somebody would write me and say.
Yeah.
And you have to be pretty thick-skinned, but I'm growing a little weary of it. Like, who needs this? I just think people need to, you know, flip the tables and imagine if they were receiving a message like that, how they might respond to it. I have spoken up a few times in those kinds of scenarios to people, and just reminded them that I'm a real person on the other end of that line, and that I'm doing a lot of what I do, giving it away for free, and making not a lot of money on it. And that if it's something that, you know, really concerns them and they don't like it, there's always the opportunity to move on gracefully.
Right.
And not, to provide feedback in a way that's supportive and constructive. But because I'm always open to that. But when it's like, oh, wow, I hate this, or wow, that's so expensive.
Yeah.
You know, when I'm selling classes and things, sometimes I get that reaction. It's like, well, A, I don't set the price, the venue does. And B, they're paying to get me there from halfway across the world. You know, so just think there's a nice way to say things, and a nice way to give feedback, and a less than nice way. And I feel like the internet really allows people to, or at least gives them the impression that they can get away with a lot. And I just wish there was a little more dignity and respect that was conveyed at times.
Yeah,
so
totally agree. I mean, I make a point of, if someone shares, say, a cake and it's rough looking, I'm like, wow, well done. Like what do I gain by saying, oh my God, your lines are crooked? Like,
well, actually, yeah.
Like, why would I say that, right?
Yeah, what do you gain? Either that or just move on. Just don't say anything. I mean,
right.
But why, like, yeah, I just don't,
It costs you nothing to click a heart or click a like.
and move on. And again, it doesn't have to be your cup. And or even like not outside of sugar arts. You know, my crochet friends, my painter friends. You know, I don't need to understand the nuance of their art or their style to say, to give a like. You created something. Yeah, you.
Right, right, right.
Right? Like, so.
Yeah, but I even do that to some extent in my classes when people will say, what do you think? Like, if I get an open-ended question, like, what do you think of what they're working on? You know, I'm pretty careful to say exactly what I think because I don't think it's always conducive to people growing and learning and being encouraged, you know, so. I will usually say, you know, well, what's giving you difficulty or is there something here you don't like? Because we can zone in on that and I can tell you how to improve it. Because, and also too, legitimately, there are, you know, beauty is in the eye of the beholder and something that somebody might be quite proud of, I might do differently, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's any better, you know? So I try to be careful with the feedback in classes when it comes to like assessing a final creation. If it's a technique and I see them doing something in a way that makes life more difficult, you know, intervene and check that. But, you know, when it's evaluating an overall piece, I just, I like them to help zoom me in on what they don't like, you know, mm-hmm. what they're struggling with. Because that just presumes less, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
But
well, I can see it being difficult, particularly in your position, because you are such a huge celebrity in the space. You must have people who, they want your approval. They want to impress you. They want to get that, you know, feedback that they can go all say, oh, Julia liked my piece, but also they're paying you to teach them, so
right, right.
That's a conflict.
You don't want to sugarcoat everything to the point that nobody gets any learning out of it either. But yeah. So there's definitely a good balance there that's struck, I think, on feedback that can be struck on giving feedback. But I do get a lot of that also online, where people just send me photos, and sometimes the photos come without any text wrapped around them, so I don't know if they're just sharing, like, I don't know what they want from me, you know. Do they want me to critique it? Do they want me to say, oh, glad you got it done, you know? So I don't usually offer any commentary other than, wow, it looks like you tried this project, did you want feedback about it, or did you have some challenges about it, or, you know, I'll ask questions back at them, you know, before I offer anything up. But just because, you know, I'm usually just psyched that people have done something.
Right,
know?
Exactly, yeah.
It doesn't matter if it's perfect, but if people genuinely want the feedback, then I will give it. But I do want to make sure they want it before I just offer it.
Mm-hmm. Well, to some extent, that's why you've got the Cookie Connection site. Like, people could go post things there and get the group and community approval and comments and stuff there.
Correct.
I mean, I'm on that site. I don't do much on it, but not because it's that. I'm on so many cake and sugar art sites.
Yes.
And I post to none of them, and that's just because I can barely get my own blog going, let alone.
Right, right. Posting. No, it's really hard for me. People think I'm online all the time, and if I'm online, it's maintaining my sites. It's not, I am not like actively watching what other people are posting or doing in the space, unless it happens to hit Cookie Connection, then I see it. But I'm trolling Instagram. I'm not trolling Facebook. I don't have time. I have time enough to get my information posted and out. And so, you know, that being said, I do encourage people to tag me if they do want a response, because there's just a lot I don't see if I'm not directly tagged or emailed. I'm not just kind of looking around casually during the day at right. stuff online.
Yeah.
But
well, even the, because one of the things I like is when you share your Saturday spotlight. That's typically yep. how I'm interacting with Cookie Connection, is because I've got your Facebook page is in one of my See First. That's that's why I'm responding all the time. That's why I have that little top fan badge, which I'm like, oh, okay, I'm a top fan. it's like, yay me, because I'm on See First. So I interact with all the posts that way. But so the Saturday spotlights. Okay, well, so explain to the listeners how that, because that's not you personally ranking that. That's the algorithm in the site.
Correct, yeah. correct. So so just for people listening, Cookie Connection is my community-based site. We've got about 13,000 to 14,000 members now. You know, a small portion of which are really, really active, but, you know, and interacting with the site. I think a lot of people cruise in and observe, mm-hmm. but aren't, like, literally commenting and liking and stuff. But the site has photo galleries. It was roughly modeled after Cake Central, mm-hmm. you know, so, but to be cookie specific. But in addition to having those photo galleries, which are a huge draw, you know, people submitting photos and them scrolling through the homepage. We've got challenges. There's an ongoing one right now about Lambeth method piping. So we're always challenging people to try new techniques. We've got tutorials that post on a monthly basis. I've got two or three people writing those. We've got surveys we conduct with the community to see how people are operating, if there are any common practices or any best practices or worst case practices related to various techniques or processes. And then general forums, too, where you can just ask one-off questions of members and get advice. So lots of things there. It's pretty exciting. It's a lot for me to manage. I basically do it all on a volunteer basis, as do all the contributors. I make enough ad revenue to pay the hard costs of maintaining the site. Mm-hmm. But that's about the extent of it. It would be great at some point to get on an expert who could help me really build it and grow it into to a point where everyone could be paid, myself included. But it's very much a labor of love. Those Saturday spotlights then feature the top trending cookies of the week. And that's all automatically calculated by the site. You know, it looks over that period of the past 7 days, and then there's a top secret algorithm that weights comments, likes, views, et cetera, to come up with a ranking. And I just literally look at those rankings and pull the photos and, you know, list them each week. Sometimes I'll do an overall look, you know, of all the cookies posted to the site. Sometimes I'll select a subcategory, like I'll just feature the top 10 Valentine's Day cookies or whatever.
Right.
So twist it up. But none of those selections are personal. People often think they are, but they aren't. You know, I wanted that to be as objective as possible. I didn't want people to think I was handpicking stuff. Just because that gets dicey, you know, and people take things so personally. So it's very objective to the extent that it can be. And it's fun. You know, it's fun. So it often pays to post a lot, too. You know, people that are really productive.
Like Terry Pringlewood.
She's also awesome, of course.
Yeah. But
she tends to get a lot featured because she's also very prolific. And,
right.
Sometimes I will go as far as to say, okay, you know, the people on this week's list are pretty similar to last week's list, so I'm going to select a subcategory and see if I've got a different set of people coming up. Sometimes I'll try to spread the wealth that way just by selecting a different cut of the, you know, a mm-hmm. different slice. It's just nice to introduce people to new decorators, too. So,
right.
But that's the extent to which I really get and make any personal choices about what gets posted there.
Okay, whatever you're doing right now, whether it's actually working on a project, or if you're washing up, or you're stuck in traffic, whatever you've got going on, take a deep breath. Everything's going to be okay, because you're awesome.
It's all a standard platform that I've just customized to make it look like a completely different site, but there's an organization that hosts all of these community-based sites in different disciplines, and so I'm riding that same platform. So they do a lot of the general technical upkeep. I don't really need to get into that unless there's some major, like, upgrade that involves me having to change stuff on the back end, and that happens probably every couple of years. So one's probably due anytime now.
Great.
Yeah, sometimes that generates a lot of work that's unpredictable. So a couple of years ago, they wanted to make the site mobile compatible.
Mm-hmm.
Whew, that changed everything. That changed every single photo layout on the site. It changed absolutely everything in how the site presented and revealed. So I had to change the formatting of every single post that had ever been posted there, basically. And that took months of time on and off to get the site ready. We didn't have too much notice for that. But months of time that I hadn't planned for. So hopefully nothing like that's coming anytime soon. But I imagine, you know, with technology changing, that there'll be another big thing like that at some point. But yeah, so that's been kind of fun. Definitely a labor of love. And my contributors are fantastic, because without them, it just wouldn't continue. It really wouldn't continue. I have some great people doing tutorials.
Some of the tutorials in there are just... Like, I will see you share the picture, and I'm like, that's really nice. I wish someone would show me how to do it. Oh, my God, it's a tutorial. Oh.
Yeah.
I get so happy.
One's going to be posting tonight. They're really talented women, and then also have a really great gift with photography and explaining, you know. But, you know, they really do. So when I look for tutorial people, I'm looking for a combination of things. You know, they can't just be really good at their craft, they've got to be able to express it either ideally in both photos and words, you know, mm-hmm. or video even, you know, some are supplementing with videos. So yeah, so there's a lot there. It's a fun site, but
yeah. And I like that the way you do the competitions, and I have meant to enter several of them, partly because of that. It's not just going to be, you know, the top decorators who win. It's you're looking for how people have improved and challenged themselves.
Yeah, and so that's, you know, that's pretty loose. I don't even like to call it a competition, but the contributors, the organizer there, Christine Donnelly, who organizes all the challenges, and the other contributors on the site they'll hand select the ones that they think were notable for some reason. And it could be, it doesn't mean that it's necessarily the best, you know, execution of something. It could be that this person just really went out of their comfort zone and tried something completely different. Or is a completely original take, or it might be extremely well executed. You know, we don't really have strict criteria for it because we don't want it to turn into a competition.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard for it not to, I will say. I mean, people do take it seriously, and there are small prizes month to month. But we really want people just to step in and really try something different. And man, we've got a core group of people that consistently do that. They're consistently surprising us. So that's really, really fun. It's getting challenging, though. We've done a lot of them. I think we're now on challenge 33. So coming up with a topic we haven't done before, I suppose repeating wouldn't be a bad thing, but it's nice to have something fresh each time. So we're really pushing the boundaries of what the next challenge will be each month, you know, and really trying to think through something different.
Yeah, you could probably recycle the topics because there'll be people who didn't participate in the early ones.
Oh, right, right. Yeah, so. Some of the early ones were 5 years ago now, so we can definitely repeat. But so far we haven't had to. So
right.
we just keep finding things. And it's, you know, we find the things often by looking sideways. So like what's happening in cakes, can we apply it to cookies? Or, you know, that sort of thing. So the Lambeth thing, mm-hmm. people are doing it on cookies, but more so on cakes. So that seemed natural. We hadn't done a piping challenge in a while. So also a good fit. Sometimes I'll try to associate the challenge with whatever my prize might happen to be. And those prizes are pretty happenstance. If like I have suddenly happened upon a glut of stuff from somebody sending me something, then that often becomes a prize. Or sometimes I'll just give a gift certificate when I've got a known supplier that I like who supports the site. So yeah, so it's fun. That's very fun. And I think that has really served to develop a lot of people's skills, or so I'm told. I wish I could participate in some of them. But I am so involved behind the scenes with Christine too. You know, we both read the challenge pretty carefully before it posts, because despite no matter how tightly you think you've constructed a challenge, there like questions will be raised. And mm-hmm. so our challenge always is to like, let's make sure we've phrased this in such a way that we've eliminated virtually all the questions that can come up. We never do, but we both are, you know, working behind the scenes on that. I'm usually the one procuring the prizes and just kind of reading it the second time, you know, to make sure we've addressed all the possible issues that could come up. Yeah. Yeah. A lot going on there for sure.
Yeah.
I think the biggest thing, though, for me this year is getting through this competition at Show Me Sweets in July,
right.
which I just think is going to be extremely exciting. So I do hope, I do hope we get a lot of cookie people in attendance. We're working on beefing up some of the cookie classes also, you know, now that we know that there's going to be a lot of cookie interest there,
mm-hmm.
Taking on selectively like additional cookie instructors so that we can serve that need too. So
I think the interest is out there. Austin had record numbers of cookies.
Yeah, it seems so. Yeah.
And I mean, I didn't go this year, but from, you know, what I've heard and seen, I can't remember the number offhand. It's too late at night for me to remember right now, but I know Kyla told me the number and I was like a little bit gobsmacked because I'm kind of used to being in that category with, you know, for a while there was just me.
Right.
And then it was just me and like Mallory May came a couple times and won, but then obviously she's busy doing other life things now. And then all of a sudden it was some of the cakers started to finally discover cookies, like Sarah Weber. And
right.
And then, yeah. And so then it's really now elevated to this incredibly high standard, which is so exciting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you were part of that discussion that spawned online recently about like what is a cookie. I think some people are maybe less excited about that. You know, they just are bound by thoughts that a cookie has to be like a small thing that sits on a plate. And, you know, I don't view it that way. I mean, I don't want to constrain competitions to the point that cookies are predictably what they always have been. I really want people to be stretching the boundaries of it. So,
yeah,
I was interested by that conversation. It just, it seemed to be too confining to me, but among other things, but yeah, the way the competitions are structured at Show Me are ideally to allow people to kind of level the playing field in some respects, but to allow people to really stretch beyond the bounds too. For me, the biggest decision in this competition was what was the first cut to make. For the longest time, I had everybody just entering under one theme, you know, regardless of skill level, regardless of whether the cookie was two-dimensional or three-dimensional. And that was simply because we just didn't have enough entrants to really splice it up, you know, because then you get into categories where you have two people competing or three, and it just doesn't seem like a viable competition to me. I mean, I think you've got to have at least five in a category to... Yeah, if it makes sense, if you're awarding three places.
It's an empty win. Like the year, the sewing machine cookie year, I was the only one in Master's Cookie. And now, so Austin won't give a first place if it's not first place worthy. So I can feel good that I got first place, but it's never going to feel as good as when there's someone else in the category. It feels like an empty victory.
Yeah, exactly. And so, I mean, and that's been the issue we've been running into at a lot of competitions, because I judge more than mine, that just too many splintered categories. Mm-hmm. And for me, like, the defining factor isn't whether somebody's a hobbyist or a professional with cookies. Oftentimes there's that division made. But honestly, some of the hobbyists, you know, this is a cookie art competition, are doing really highly refined artistic work because they have the time to do it. You know, they're not running a commercial establishment where they're having to churn out stuff on a time frame. Mm-hmm. So some of them are just super highly skilled, and many of them are, you know, placing and winning. So for me, that was never a dividing line. But the two-dimensional 3D thing is, because they do require different techniques and skills in different areas. And so to me, that translates into different judging criteria. And so that was the first cut we made. And I think it's also a little harder for judges to judge them apples to apples as well, because they're looking at completely different things. Yeah. Some of the same things really do matter and translate for sure, but we have a couple of different criteria in the 3D category that you won't see reflected in the 2D one. So we'll see how it goes, and as the competition grows, we'll probably be making further divides, but we're trying to just collect enough information about our entrants as they enter to help us decide what's the best way to do that. And it might be, you know, years of experience competing. Mm-hmm. That's really a divider, because once people do a competition, they kind of know what to expect, and I think they're better able to compete. It's sort of like standardized tests, you know. Once you know how to take a standardized test, you tend to perform better on them. So we'll see. You know, we are gathering more information to allow us to kind of make those decisions in a thoughtful way, as opposed to arbitrarily.
Yeah, I mean, that's what we've been doing too, because we've got this cake framework set up, and there's always the temptation, well, should we pull cookies into its own separate thing and not have the divisionals, the beginner through advanced, etc.? But then, no matter what you do, someone's upset. Like, that's the rule of the show.
Right.
Someone's always upset because it's now not working for them. Like, the questions people, for some reason, thought they should fire directly at me in England the day after the Austin show. Like, why was this judged this way? I'm like, literally, I wasn't there, guys. I don't know. Like, why are you yelling at me? But, like, people would PM me and demand that the cookie rules be changed this way, this way, this way. And I kind of had to bite my tongue from saying, I'm not going to rewrite the rules so you personally can win.
Right.
A lot of the questions were coming down to, how can I personally win? How can I manipulate this process to personally win? It's like, that's not what it's about. That's not.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Every competition has a slightly, you know, a slight twist to its rules, which should make it kind of a fresh new challenge for people who are doing them across the country, you know, doing multiple of them.
Yeah.
I would regard it as a challenge, as it should be. But yeah, it is interesting. I think the most important thing is just to be, you know, to really clearly highlight what those criteria are that you're evaluating, and judges consistently, you know, and fairly across them. And hopefully, you know, people will feel like the process is fair. we want people to come out of these competitions feeling good, regardless of what they won or lost, and feeling like they learned something. So also, too, a big part of the process is feedback and our judges sitting down and kind of writing that out. There was a bit of a snafu with the Oklahoma show last year because we had written out exhaustive feedback, but somehow it didn't get distributed at the show at the end of the competition as it should have. We got it out to people afterward to ask, but it had been written for everybody, and we'll continue to do that. We just need to make sure that it gets released at show and people know when that's happening, because that's the easiest place to do it. But that's, I think, really important, so that people walk away from the show knowing, you know, why they scored how they did. You know, there's no question there. That's where the learning comes in. But
yeah, and even that's tricky. I mean, there have been years at Cake International where that's gone really, really, really well, and there have been years where it has not. And same thing at Austin, and sometimes it's because there's a diva competitor who just won't take anything for an answer, and sometimes it's because there's a diva judge who just thinks they know everything when they don't. And so I've been on both sides of that, and I've seen both sides of it, and really everyone just needs to calm down. That would really help. And I mean, that's what I keep saying. I know what it's like to be disappointed. I know what it's like to be frustrated, but you take a deep breath, you suck it up, and you go for the next one.
Yeah, exactly. Right? It's just a cookie competition after all.
Yeah. And, you know, emotions run high, and you're tired, and you've poured your heart into this piece, and we get it, but take a breath. If it's subjective. That's really, we're in a subjective medium.
Yep.
And sometimes someone might not like your thing, and that stings. Get over it. I guess I should also ask you, as a complete sort of change of pace, you have a lot of amazing products, too, your airbrushes and stencils.
Well, I should say the airbrush no longer, because I discontinued it shortly after I released it. I just had some issues with the manufacturer. The airbrush is fantastic. I love it, and I continue to use it.
I didn't know it had been discontinued.
Yeah, you didn't. Yeah, it was rough. I just, I don't want to get too into it. It was a very personal thing. I just felt that certain things had been misrepresented.
Okay.
And nothing that would impact a customer, but just impacted my level of trust.
Right.
And so I just said, I'm out. And I'm working now with on and off, I should say, more off than on, with another manufacturer to see if I can release something comparable. I do think there's a place for a dual action airbrush in the market, because all of the airbrushes that are being sold to cookiers right now are single action, and they're a great entry point, but I just think they afford a lot less control. There are a lot of other features that I really liked about my airbrush too, which I would incorporate into anything new, but I'm just so overwhelmed with work right now in this competition organization and other stuff that I'm not sure how quickly I can get a replacement out. But the stencil thing is chugging along. Each month I release a new couple of sets, and that's just a whole nother work stream. It challenges me in a different way. When I first launched it, I was criticized heavily, getting back to some of the social media awareness points. Yeah, by more than one person who had been like an avid fan of all my really wild and crazy 3D videos, who was just really disappointed that I was doing more stenciled stuff, which was easier and that anyone could do, quote unquote, and thought I had kind of sold out. And, you know, my response to that is, yeah, it's easier, but I feel like there's great value in allowing people to do something like that looks complex and beautiful and professional, and giving them the tools to do that easily. Like, what the heck's wrong with that? I mean, so I am quite proud, because I feel like I've opened up a realm of airbrushing that people might, a level that maybe people weren't doing before, because my stencil sets are a little more complex, but at the same time, a lot of people, beginners, relatively easy access to really quality looking stuff. The problem with stencils is, you know, there's a tendency for everything to look cookie cutter. So when we launched the stencil line, there were clearly others doing stencils already. So I wanted to present something that was different than what they were doing, but also allowed people more design possibilities so that they weren't just thrust into the situation of using the stencil in the way it was literally created. So if all of my sets are layered, mm-hmm. there are multiple ways you can put them together, you know, so they don't all have to be in the same configuration. You can use some layers, not use other layers. So it allows a little more design possibility. And for me, it makes the design process really fun because I have to think about how all those are going to piece together and how they might be arranged on a cookie and what relative scale they need to be to look good and what colors I might be putting in one area versus another. And, you know, so there's a lot of thought that goes into the design, which is a completely different design process for me than doing a 3D cookie, for instance. So I like to mix it up and I like having that design challenge. But I'm also heavily involved in the marketing of that too. Mm-hmm. And that's actually, I'm right in the middle of renegotiating a contract with them right now, which is tweaking all the marketing commitment kind of stuff. You know, I do all the shows. My stencil partner doesn't go out to shows. So if we go do a show, that's me, you know, funding right. it and going and selling. But yeah, so that's just another thing I do. And I it's been fun. You know, we've been 2 years into, I think we're two plus years into it. And there's no shortage of ideas. I design roughly quarterly. I'll come up with 3 new sets, and the sets are actually 2 sets at a time that work together. So there's 6 new sets, I should say, that come out quarterly. And I do those in batches. So I'm beginning a design cycle now, and probably about a month those stencils will all be complete, and then we'll release them over time. So we're usually working a few months ahead of whatever the season is.
They're really cool. I remember you did that video where you were showing the math of having the multiple airbrushes for the multiple stencils. And it was really cool. I mean, I don't sell cookies, but if I did, I want that setup because the way that you showed it as well, if you've got the 4 different colors and you're doing these things and just how much fewer times you need to change things out, I could totally see how someone selling cookies totally makes that investment back right away.
Oh, yeah. No, like in an order, practically.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that video related to, for those who haven't seen it, was how to kind of streamline the process of doing a multicolor stencil, you know, mm-hmm. basically. And the biggest time sink when you're doing any kind of stenciling operation with multiple colors is swapping out the color in the airbrush. So the more airbrushes you have, the fewer the swap outs and the more time saved getting through the process, which ultimately pays back that investment pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm.
The next biggest time suck is swapping stencils down the line, you know, having to reset them down the line. So, you know, secondarily, you'd look at getting more than one stencil if you were going to be doing hundreds of a certain type of cookie. I work in a lot of colors at once, typically. So just, and I probably have, I can't tell you how many airbrushes I have, but normally having about 5 or 6, will get me through, you know, a typical multicolor cookie. You know, I might have 5 or 6 colors on it. That might be the max I'd go. And then I don't have to do any swap outs at all of coloring. Yeah, you have to have the right gun and connection. You know, there's some, the key thing when people are buying airbrushes, I think, and if they're planning to do multicolor work, is to make sure they have a quick connect adapter. It's one where you can just snap the airbrush into place at the end of the hose and unclick it. You know, when you pull down on a collar and it comes right out, as opposed to having to unscrew and rethread stuff, you know. So mm-hmm. again, it's really a time-saving thing in the actual apparatus itself. It's important too.
Yeah, I mean, because mine, I have just that little airbrush, it's sometimes marketed as Pegasus, but for a while it was at Michael's as the Duff brand one. So
right,
it's
right,
got
right.
Duff's name on it, but I just, it was back when before they started excluding it from their coupons, you know, Michael's always has that coupon. And so I uh-huh. waited for that. It was like, you know, I think it was like the Easter sale or something like that 50% coupon. And I went and got 50% off of what was then an $80 airbrush. So that uh-huh. was, but they figured out people were doing it. So then they jacked up the price double and then they just excluded it from the coupons. But that's what I'm still even using here. I just use it because it's the adapter has the right thing that I can plug it into a British thing and it doesn't fry it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But it is basic entry level and it is fine for my 5 times a year usage.
Yeah. One of the things I caution people about, you know, there's always this complaint about speckled spray patterns, and oftentimes people think it's because they have a dirty needle, which it can be. But oftentimes it's that the compressor just isn't delivering enough output pressure to cause that spray to be finely atomized and dispersed. And a lot of those mini compressors, like on that one, they might say they're rated to like 24, 25 PSI, but when you get them in actuality, they're probably delivering something less, you know. Yeah. So some of those just don't do a good job of distributing the coloring, even set on their highest setting, you know. And I've experimented with a lot of compressors, so I can pull a gun that might be on one of those and put it on a higher output compressor and get a completely different result, a much finer spray. So I always tell people, you know, when they're airbrushing, you know, first of all, like if you're working on lower medium on a small compressor, try jacking it up to like high. And if that doesn't eliminate the speckling problem, then you probably either have a dirty gun or a damaged needle, you know. So there's sort of a progression of troubleshooting that one goes through. But people tend to underestimate the importance of the compressor. And it was actually the biggest issue we had in putting this system together, finding one that paired nicely and did all it needed to do. And part of the reason that is all these compressors are made in China. So you think you're getting one thing and then something else gets delivered. Seriously.
Right.
You know, yeah. There's just a high degree of inconsistency in what comes through. So, and a long time waiting for it too, to discover that, hey, this isn't what they build it to be. So there's a huge opportunity for someone to make a really high quality compressor that's, you know, reliably made to certain standards. But I don't know that that's ever going to happen anytime soon here in the US, but wow, yeah, that was an interesting challenge with that project.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not doing very many cookies with mine, to be honest. Typically, if I'm airbrushing, it's because, oh, that's a lot of cake space to cover. I want to cover it quick. Yeah. I mean, I have some stencils, and I have a stencil genie, and I've used it twice.
That's a great tool.
And the thing is, I used it once. I thought, I'm going to, you know, break out some of these stencils I've had for years, and I'm going to make some really cute blue-tinged sort of Christmas cookies, like bells with, like, sort of like some of Tundi's work, you know, with the piping. And, you know, I was going to try all the things I've watched all of you do, and I made these really cute cookies for the school bake sale, and then they didn't sell because they were too fancy and people didn't want to pay for them. So now it's like, but that's sugar art for you, right?
Yeah, well, that's probably why I'm not producing anymore. It's a lot to find the right customer to, like, command the premiums you deserve. And also, too, I mean, the primary reason I'm not selling is that I just don't like repeating stuff over and over, and customers would always come into my shop, and they'd always gravitate towards designs they'd done before. I mean, that's our natural tendency. If you see something and you like it, you know, you want it. And so I just was ending up doing so much repetitive repeat work. I was just like, I don't want to do this. I just want to create for the sake of creating and having it be fresh every time, at least for me, you know?
Yeah.
So that's why I teach mostly now. But I've taken a step back into serving customers, at least this year. I don't know if it'll lead to anything, but I had an interesting opportunity present itself, and then an event planner contacted me, having seen some of my stuff online, and they wanted me to provide a lot of three-dimensional cookies for this event, a very large event. And I said, well, I don't produce anymore, so I don't think I'm the person for you, you know, for eating. I just don't want to get into doing a bunch of anything. And but I thought about it for a while, and I phoned him back. I said, but, you know, we could do an interactive kind of airbrushing station where all I do is bring in blank cookies, and the kids, it was a bat mitzvah, you know, get to decorate them, because that really plays into my teaching ability, and less so the big scale production of, you know, highly decorated stuff. So we did that. You know, we custom designed some stencils for them, brought in a bunch of airbrushes. And this was just a month ago, and it was a really fun, you know, party activity for the kids, really fun, and a really lucrative job for me. So it was one component of a much bigger event, but you know, it was great. That was fun. So I'd love to do more of that kind of thing, more performance art. Yeah, I also did a little demo that accompanied it, where I put together a 3D keepsake for the guest of honor. So I'd like to do more of that kind of customer service. I think, you know, not churning out the same thing for consumption, but because I don't have a commercial kitchen, but doing more teaching based stuff. So we'll see.
Where you don't have to pipe 10 million dots yourself.
Right, exactly. You know,
your dots are so amazing. And I'm like, no, I'm just not going to do that. I watch you do dots so I don't have to.
So that's my life. just juggling a lot of different stuff right now, teaching some events, lots of hands-on classes, Cookie Connection, competitions. I'm not sure where it's all going to fall out, but some things probably do have to fall out, literally, just so that I can continue to maintain my sanity.
Like I said, clone yourself in all that free time. Yeah. Okay, well, so then let's do a quick recap to wrap it up then. So what is the deadline for people who want to do the television thing?
There is no firm date yet, but the show itself is July 13th and 14th, I believe.
Right.
But if they want to be considered for casting, the casting's going to officially begin. The production company is going to kick into gear in April or May. That's all they said to me.
Okay.
So there's already been one preliminary transmission of entrants to them to look at. I'm not sure they've done anything with it yet. But as we get additional entrants, we relay that information to them. So, or actually Peggy and Liz do. I'm pretty disengaged from seeing, I'm trying to stay out of seeing who's on the list. Mm-hmm. So just because I'm judging.
Since the recording of that interview, there is now an actual deadline for submissions for the TV show. I'll read it straight from Julia's own post. It says, the casting company must receive all casting submissions by May 1st, and to qualify, all entrants must also register for the 3D competition. I'll post the links in the show notes for where you need to go, but keep in mind that you do have a deadline now for May 1st to be on the TV show. Now, you can register for the actual competition at the Show Me Sweet show through July 1st, but if you want to be on the TV show, you have to do that part by May 1st.
So the sooner people register, the better. And registering is just making a commitment to enter. It's saying, I want to do this. I want to be on TV or I don't, but I want to enter the competition. You don't have to declare anything about your piece or what it looks like or any of that at this point. There is a separate entry form, and that might not be the best name for it, which you can download now. And that does need to be filled out. That gets filled out when the piece comes in, you know, at the time of the show. Or like a couple days prior, because it requires that you list the techniques you've used, identify where your cookies are in the piece, you know, a few different things to help the judges with the judging process. But that doesn't need to be done until the piece is obviously conceived and created. But I would just say, you know, sooner is better, because I don't really know. It could be April that the production company kicks in. It could be May, but people don't want to be left out of that process.
Right.
And we'll alert people as soon as it's, you know, starts in full force. But, you know, we're gathering entrants now. So,
right.
So that's that.
So they can get all the documents they need, the Show Me Sweets, showmesweets.com.
Showmesweets.com. And then if they look under competition, the first thing under competitions is Julia Usher's cookie art competition. They click on that and they'll see information for both the 2D and 3D categories. And again, it's the 3D category is the one that's being televised. But both competitions have substantial prize money, and both should be really fun. So I hope people participate in both. Cool. But all that information is there.
And if people want to take your classes. It's for the rest of you have an impressive list on your like Facebook page here of your events coming up. I mean, it just makes me tired looking.
it's pretty exhausting. A lot of them are show. I mean, I've got a lot of shows I just do. Like the next event I've got is SoFlo in Miami. Yeah. So I'm there just vending. And they're vending my stencils and demoing. When I vend, I demo. I'm demoing all day. So there is while I don't conduct classes often at shows just because it's too much for me to transport all of the stuff there myself, I am usually demoing in my booth. And so that can be a class unto itself without anybody paying for it because I show a lot. Then I have a bunch of stuff coming up. I have a spring and a fall class at Wilton this year in Chicago, which should be good. Those are going to be fun classes and a little bit different. So those are going to involve a bake component too. So people are going to be handling the dough, baking 3D pieces.
Oh, wow.
So they get a feeling for that part of the process because that's actually a pretty big part of the process. And in most classes, the way they've been structured in the past, my classes, all of the pieces are pretty much baked when people come in because there just isn't time to bake and decorate unless we have a 2 or 3 day class. And those are sometimes harder to sell. But with these Wilton classes, they're 2 day classes. So we're baking and starting some icing on day one and then finishing things off on day two. those should be pretty exciting. And then I've got some international stuff coming up too, but not as much this year. It's interesting. I'm also juggling a large remote home remodel right now. So, so that's something I had hoped to have done last year, but the project's gone incredibly slowly, so it's really sucking the energy out of me right now. Lots of decisions to be made, and so that's all happening on top of trying to keep up a pretty rigorous travel schedule. So we'll see.
Yeah, I see. In September, you'll be in Galveston. I know. I just, in terms of listeners, most of my listeners, for whatever reason, are in, well, for obvious reason, I have a lot of Texas listeners coming out of the Austin show, but it seems California and Texas are where most of my listeners are. So listeners can see Julia in Galveston and on separate.
Where am I in Galveston in September? I don't remember.
Oh, it's on your list. Join Julia on Cookie Rehab.
Oh, that's
Or is that the, is that a cruise?
That's the Cookie Cruise.
So okay.
We depart from Galveston and we're going all over. And sold out. That's been sold out for a while. So, I was like, what am I doing? Yeah, so I'll be teaching a board and a boat, which is always a challenge because even the slightest motion translates into a movement of the pastry bag.
Mm-hmm.
The boat, you know, motions can be ever so slight and you just, they just amplify by the time they hit your hand. So, but that's a fun event and it's been sold out for a while, but that's a multi-instructor event. So there'll be a few of us teaching different cookie projects throughout the course of a week.
I've known people who've been on past ones and they absolutely loved it.
Yeah, it's really great. I think there are 80 going on it this year. It's more intimate than, say, a Cookie Con, so people get a little more personalized attention, I think. So some people love, you know, each event has its purpose. With Cookie Con, you get exposure to so many people and so many different things and techniques and approaches, and, you know, there are tons of people there. So you might feel a little disconnected in that environment. Whereas with a cruise, you know, fewer people teaching, but a little more personalized experience, I think. So they're just tailored for different ways, both great events.
Mm-hmm.
I love doing both. So that's what's coming up.
Yep. Busy, busy. And obviously you've got the books and the YouTube anytime. So.
Yes. Yeah. The book is out of print. Both books. I have two books.
I know. I've only found one here.
They're available in ebook format, and that's the more cost-effective way to go, because I'll often get emails saying, hey, why is your book with $200? You know, that's because of supply and demand, and it's out of print, so those that have used copies are selling them for extremely high prices. I have no control over that. So I just instruct people, even if they like print matter, to go to the ebook version because it's like $9, you know, so, and it's all the same contents. I have been talking to my publisher lately about maybe doing a limited reprint of the decorating book just because cookie decorating is so darn popular, and I wrote that book a long time ago. It feels dated to me. It's very dated, and it's not reflective of anything I do right now, but as far as projects, but it's still a great resource in terms of fundamental decorating techniques. So we are talking about a limited reprint. I just don't know if that's going to happen.
Right.
Book writing thing, nothing I'll probably do again. Just economically, it doesn't make sense. And the process of writing is like a 1 or 2 year process on both of those books. And by the time they came out, it was kind of like they felt obsolete. I felt I had lost a large part of my life. Let's put it that way. So for me, the video production is a lot more immediate. That too is time consuming, but it's, it's the turnaround on that's a lot shorter. So, and a lot more varied, you know, because the content's more compartmentalized. So, you know, I'll continue to do that as long as I can.
And I'll put in the show notes all the links to the YouTube channel and to your website and, you know, Cookie Connection specific within your website and social media and all the good stuff. So people, if there's anyone listening who isn't already fangirl, fanboy following you, they can start.
Okay, excellent. I appreciate that. And thank you, too, for all your time. This has been really fun. I'm glad we finally connected because we've been talking about this for a while.
I know. Maybe one day we'll actually get to meet.
I know. I hope so. Where's your next event?
Probably Cake International.
Okay. Yeah. Sure I'm going to that.
Well, one day I'll finally meet you in person.
We will. I hope so. It's been really fun. I appreciate it.
I'm still giddy fangirling that you came on the show. Thank you.
And I hope people listen to it.
I think this one will be a big draw. You have a lot of fans amongst my friends, and it goes pretty far once people start sharing it. So
good. Okay. Anybody listening too, just encourage people if they have questions. I try to make myself pretty available. So email is always the best way to reach me, the fastest way to reach me. If you try to message me through some like peripheral social media
platform, it may be longer before I get back to you. So I do encourage people to use my email address, which is sweetlife@juliausher.com.
Well, thank you so much for being on, and I will let you go back to your incredibly busy life.
And have a good evening. Get some sleep. I've got a few more hours before I do that. But yeah, thank you again. I appreciate
okay.
it. Okay. Talk soon. Okay, bye.
All right. Bye.
This has been the Eat the Evidence podcast. A warm thanks to all of my contributors, and you can find out more about them and the things discussed on today's episode in the show notes by visiting the podcast section of the Eat the Evidence website, eat-the-evidence.com/podcast. There, you'll find social media links, as well as links to iTunes, Stitcher, and other places where you can subscribe so you'll never miss an episode. I've also posted detailed instructions on how to leave me a Facebook voicemail message and other options to call into the show. Please do feel free at any time to call in your very own cakeformation, funny story, talk about a challenge you're having or have recently overcome, or rant about something driving you crazy. And if you like the show, please post a review on iTunes and share it with all of your sugar artist friends. This show was produced and edited by me, Kimberly Chapman. Thank you so much for listening, and remember, you are an amazing artist, and everyone involved with this podcast supports you. You can do it! Until next time, bye-bye, and good luck with whatever you're working on.
Sugarcoat everything to the point that nobody gets any learning out of it either.